Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Personal Transformation. And actually, this is take two. Well, we had a little technical error, but we're back. And I have Deb Mayberry with me. One quick thing, obviously, so I'm not here to tell you what to do. So, folks, I'm only offering my own personal experiences in my recovery of childhood sexual abuse. The show's going to be a little bit short, but we're going to get right to the point. We have some things to cover. I am so honored. I have Deb Mayberry back here with me, the author of Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. And we have so much to share. So, well, we're just going to get right to it because I made a boo-boo and I want to make up for this. So, Deb, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good to be back after 15 minutes of panicking and trying to sort things out, or I guess 45 minutes or so, right?
Yeah, but we got her.
We learned a lot.
We did.
We learned a lot.
What not to do.
To make sure we programmed the show for the right duration, what happened, that we only had the 15 minutes and then we were gone.
Yeah.
But then we also learned that we couldn't start up another one right away.
That's right.
But we learned that if we delete both of those,
we're ready to go.
So here folks, we're back.
But anyway, folks, I have Deb here with me tonight, and I guess we have lots of things we could talk about. I guess the biggest thing I'm going to start off with is, well, what brought you to write your book, and what brought you to Gatehouse?
Oh my goodness, I wasn't expecting
that's
to go to that point. But
so I know
what,
kind of...
listen, what started, why I wanted to write the book was I was at a place in my life, and this goes back to 2011, and I was lying in bed one night, and I kept wondering why I'm doing all the things I'm doing, right? So at that point, I had done firewalks and rebirthing, trance dances, which are all altered state, spiritual, native, you know, various, what do you call them, journey seeking kind of things I did. And I cycled across Canada. And I was lying in bed one night and I just kept saying, why am I doing this? Why am I spending all this money? Why am I spending all this time and going in this direction? And I started to have just unbelievable flashbacks to the childhood violations that I had had. And that was unprecedented. It had never happened to me before like that. I had what I always call memories that I could call upon, but I didn't have flashbacks. And so I had a series of flashbacks. It compelled me. I went into my office. I had to jump out of bed. I started writing, which the chapter at that time was called Debbie Unlock the Door, because when I was sitting in the car with my final perpetrator, he got out of the car and I was in the car. I locked the car door. He wanted me to go into his apartment and he kept saying, Debbie, unlock the door. So I sat that evening in a half hour and I wrote that and I bawled. I was crying and it just all came out and I went back into bed and I was pissed off. And so I started at the universe again. What was that about? And what does that have to do with all these things and personal growth that I have done? And I kept quizzing, why this, why that, like I've never experienced before, you know, basically what business universe do you have putting this onto me? And I asked you, you know, for something else. Anyways, it immediately, again, it hit me. I was to write this book and this book was a compilation book. It was about the healing process for people that had been sexually violated. And then it was like my hand just started moving. I grabbed my book and I just, question after question after question, I just listed it all in my little black book. And it all just formulated itself. And I knew what I needed to do and how I needed to do it. And I had all the tools. And so I just started from there. And that's where it all began, was that night questioning why I was doing so many different things. But when I reflect back, all of those things on one level or another were all about personal healing.
So was that prior to us meeting in 2012?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I ended up at the Gatehouse because I had put out an email to a few selected friends, and Brad Hutchinson, right?
He was the ED at the house at the time?
He wasn't at the house at the time, but he was a good friend with Arthur Lockhart, who's the founder of the house. So when I said what I was doing, he wrote back, he said, contact Arthur at the house. So I had contacted Arthur at the house and I had set it up an appointment to record an interview with them. And in that period of time, I knew Charmaine Lovren, and she had become a fairly good friend of mine at the time. And I knew about, she was a childhood sexual abuse advocate already full on.
Fantastic one.
And so I contacted her and I said, hey, Charmaine, I'm doing this book. How would you like to tell your story? Because one of the reasons why we connected is I had previously written a book called What Is Your Teenage Daughter About? Or sorry, What Is Your Teenage Daughter Afraid Of? She contacted me about what that was about. And she wanted to write a book. So when I asked her to be interviewed and to share her story, she was so happy to be able to get her story out there in print. So I went, I interviewed her. I knew a lot about Charmaine. I knew a lot about the story, but I had taken the subway across the city because it was a snowy day and I didn't want to drive. I knew it would take less time. And so I was standing waiting for the first connection, which was the bus in front of Charmaine's place out in Scarborough somewhere. And I looked out, my hands were shaking, and it wasn't because it was a cold day. It was a winter day. But there was something on the inside that was shaking my hands, and I didn't know what it was, and I hadn't experienced it before. And so it reminded me of the flashbacks that I had, and I thought, okay, what have I buried? Have I buried something? I need to find this out, because I think I'm relatively healthy around the issue of what had happened to me in childhood, but I need to find out if I've packed it down so tightly. So I went and I interviewed Arthur, and during that interview, he said, come to the Gatehouse. Come to the Gatehouse and do the phase one program. You'll learn so much. It'll help you with the book. So at that time, I signed on, and it was perfect timing. There was a group that was signing up literally within a week or two, and there was a spot. And I did that group, and then I started facilitating. I went to the facilitator training right away, and then I joined the phase two group, which is where we met immediately after that. And I believe that it was, yes, because that would have been
the conference. We met the conference.
I was going to say, maybe we met at the conference.
We met at the conference. I remember we met at the conference.
Because that would have been in April. So if I started, yeah, so it would have been almost simultaneously that what we met, and then the phase two was going to be coming, starting up very soon after that. Mm. Yeah, because at the conference, I asked Art if I could speak and ask people at the second part of the conference when everybody's mingling around, and if I could have just a few minutes on the floor and to tell people about the book. And I had a number of people from that conference approach me and give me their information, their contact information, and want to share their story. That day was big. And you were standing outside smoking when I left, and I saw you looking at me. And I thought, oh, I wonder what he's thinking. And I think I approached you even. But
you did approach me. I remember.
Yeah, because there was something there. And then I knew you were thinking about it, but I didn't know you were ready. And I just wanted to say hi. And anyways, it was, I guess, during, you know, when we got to know each other through the phase two, that you then said at some point, Deb, I'm going to do it. I want to share my story. I'm ready.
And that's what sprouted me my wings that brings me here to this day. Well, part of it anyway, for sure. There's no doubt about that.
It's so great that, like I said, the first time we recorded, I don't know if people listen to that part, but when people share their story, it's huge. It helps people get their voice back and to realize that they're not alone. And when they join into a group or, you know, a live group like the Gatehouse or in that compilation book, there are so many people that did amazing things after that, because not only were they telling their story, not only were they doing that with a group of other people, so there's some safety and security there. Not only were they doing it with somebody they trusted, because nobody would talk to me if they didn't trust me. But also, the huge thing in the healing process is then they were sharing and they were serving other people. And, you know, person after person after person said, I'm doing this for other people. I want to make a difference. I want there to be meaning with what happened to me. And that is so powerful, because you turn that, whatever horrific experience that you had, into serving somebody else. And that turns it into a gift for somebody else, because they're learning everything that you've already learned on the healing journey, and it complements what they have done or are currently doing on their journey. One insight can change a person's life. It can change their perspective. It can reframe. You know, like we were talking over dinner earlier, and last week in group, I had three people in one group one evening come to a significant insight in that group, and that was so powerful.
And I know that when I gave my story, when I talk about her freedom that I got, and that was a huge freedom for me, and it led to things which I had never, ever, which ever possibly imagined. I mean, obviously my story was very important and gave me a voice which I never really realized that I had, and mm-hmm. kind of hiding there, and that really helped me discover other things that have brought me to where I am today. Excuse me, it's allowed me to do many other things. We talked briefly about James there before we had to cut and edit our first take, right? Mm-hmm. But as an example, and it allowed me to do many things which I never really thought, because I never really considered myself to be kind of a public person about what my experience was. But my anger is really what drove me to do that. And my anger gave me some beautiful things, like getting to know you, for example, Charmaine, James Buffin. I mean, art. I mean, there's so many different names I could give that I've met some really good people. And then they've also done some amazing things, as you just pointed out, and are still arguing some amazing things.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much, you know, everybody that had the sort of the advocacy gene in them, there are people that are still private with their story in terms of, you know, full on public and all that. But the people that went forward and had the advocacy in them, they've done some pretty amazing things and made a big impact in other people's lives. And, you know, let's face it, we're well into this movement of awareness.
No.
The Me Too movement, you know, the pros and cons with that, but it woke a lot of people up, and especially in terms of accountability. Mm. And so many people came forward. I wish that had been also a movement for men as well. It was more of a female adult movement as opposed to the whole abuse spectrum.
The whole picture, yeah.
But you know what? Listen, it's powerful, powerful work, and it takes a lot of people doing a lot of different things to come together collectively and to make a huge difference, because sexual abuse of all kinds is rampant in every society, every socioeconomic group. It's vast, all around the globe. So everybody contributing and bringing their insights and their knowledge and their advocacy. And, you know, the more people that come forward and talk about it, the more younger people that will come forward sooner. And that makes a huge difference in people's healing, I believe. The sooner that the person can talk about it and connect with other people and know they're not alone, then the less likely they are to have layers and layers and layers of shame over years of broken relationships and addictions, you know, and just sadness and a sense of feeling alone. So the book and what everybody's done from there, and, you know, at a place like the Gatehouse, people do so much incredible work. It's really, you know, I'm so impressed with how much time, effort, the emotional commitment mm-hmm. to doing this, but there are so many really amazing people that I've met that are doing great work.
You know, and your book led on even for yourself doing other things as well. And one of the things being is now you're a spirituality therapist. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that? I know that was a bit of a toll, and you're still working on it, right? To a certain degree, right?
Well, the thing is because of facilitating at the Gatehouse, it really awoke that part of me that went to university in the 80s in psychology. And I always planned on pursuing that either with a social work degree or something else. And life took me in a different direction as an entrepreneur. And then after being at the Gatehouse, so I started there in 2012. And so about 3 years later, I decided, hey, I'm going to be doing a career change anyways. So this only makes sense. So I had applied for my master's, was accepted, and then I also went to the Transformational Arts College here in Toronto. And I love their program so much that I decided not to do the master's online and do the spiritual psychotherapist training with other like-minded people, because I wanted to unify and thread together the advocacy work with childhood sexual abuse, the desire to be a therapist, but also the part of me that has been sort of a closet spiritualist So I wanted to pull those two together, and the program was so insightful and enlightening for me, because I never realized how many people out there have this desire to do really good spiritual work and combine that with various types of psychotherapy. So yeah, so I went back 2015, I started up the program, and then really jumped in a little bit later in the year. And so now I'm a registered psychotherapist with CRPO, which is the governing body in Ontario. And I'm in the qualifying status, which means I haven't hit the 450 one-on-one hours yet. There's been a lot of things going on in my world, including moving and selling my business. So I'm down in the hours there, but you know, my heart is really in group therapy, and I have probably over 1,000 hours there. So I'm seeing if I can transfer some of those hours into the fully qualifying. But that's fine. That'll come. I'm not even concerned about that. But yeah, I do one-on-one, and it's available in person, and it's also available online these days on a secure platform. So it's really opened up the opportunity to work with people from various places. Mm.
You know, that's really awesome that you're doing that now. But you've done a lot of things through that process as well. Like you put out a CD, for example.
Yeah, I, you know, I was, I'll share this publicly for the first time. I mean, I was laying in bed one night, kind of like the Unlock the Door experience. And there was a lot going on at that time. It was sort of a dark night of the soul. It was a lot of questions in my world, and I was laying in bed one night and basically was, you know, told to get going and stop moping around a little bit. There'd been a little bit of a lull in there, and just focusing on school. For most people, working 9 to 5 and going to school part-time would be enough, but in my world, I guess it wasn't. And that turned into, what would I do if I had a certain period of time on this planet? And the first thing that came to mind was the music. And I had, you know, put the music to bed when I was about 21, 22 and hadn't played my guitar in years. And then met up with, you know, was with my partner who was a musician, and I was encouraged a lot at that time. And so I continued to write, and there were songs that were coming just at me randomly. Like the, on Vulnerable Places, there's a song called Where Do Angels Play? And that arrived, it woke me up on the Sunday after it's about the Sandy Hook shooting. And that woke me up Sunday morning, and I said, no, you take that to somebody else. Like, the whole tune and the lyrics were coming to me, waking me up at about 5:30 in the morning. And I was like, no. And then I went back to sleep. And usually when you go back to sleep after an idea like that, you don't remember.
Yeah.
You remember having it, but you don't remember what the tune was or anything. And it woke me up about a half hour, an hour later, like with more force. And so I got up and I went out into the living room and grabbed my guitar and I wrote that song. So I was having experiences like that. And there are a handful of songs on there that I say they came from somewhere else, not from me. And so, yeah, I wrote the album, and that was my biggest fear. Terrified, you know, singing anywhere except for myself, and and even with my partner at the time, it was so hard to even, you know, sing. So I decided to speak to somebody who I knew was a music producer, Jason LaPrade, and we had a bit of a connection anyways. And so I called him and I said, I'm ready to do this. This is crazy. This is a childhood dream. Will you help me? And he said he would help me. And I had met a variety of sort of small time musicians in the Toronto area. And every time I asked somebody, they said yes. There were two people. One wasn't available at the time and one was really sick. And so everybody else came together and I was completely blown away by what we collectively put together. It was a spiritual experience. I just so honored, and you know, now I have enough for another album. Jason and I, we were just speaking the other day about it. I can't kind of reveal some of the terminology and things that we'll do, but yeah, it's all there. So that was a big one, and then I also did the short film
I was going to ask you about
that as
well.
The short film Hush You. Unfortunately, I can't say too much about that. It was an amazing experience. But a couple of the people that were involved with that did some really awful things, and I was betrayed in that. So I don't like to give too much energy into that. If I had a lot of money, I would be going after some people. But I've decided that it was a learning experience, and there's a few other things going on, but but I'm just going to put that on hold. But that was a really powerful
film. It was powerful.
And we, it's based on a play, but I created this whole new story and involved the people at the gatehouse as well at the end of that, where real people were coming, walking by the camera. And, there's a line in the song that I wrote for the film. It says, pick your child or pick your man.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the people were, pick me, pick your child. Mm. It was really, really powerful. And unfortunately what happened, with that all got cut out. And I did not give my consent for any of that. And it was stolen because I was a producer on that, as well as the lead actress and wrote the music and, the lines. And it's a sore spot, but a real learning experience as well.
What not to do the next time? If you decide to do it again.
Exactly. And I will. I most definitely will. I have another film in my mind. And actually, prior to that, it'll probably be a play. I have a play that has been in my mind now for a few years. And I just have to find the book where I wrote it out in before the move. But it's a lot of material came out in that. And that would be, filmed and probably released.
And another film that I know you've got in the back burner right now too, is of what you did, is I remember you coming to the gatehouse and you filmed me, and I know you did with a few others. Now this is all related to Unlock the Door, kind of finishing that, I guess, in your own way, and you added a bunch of things to it. And one of the things you did is you came by the house and you filmed me, and we did an interview kind of like what we're doing now, but the only difference is you filmed it as well. Can you elaborate more about that? I know you're not ready to release it yet, but in the future, you will release that, I hope.
Yes. What happened was, so Unlock the Door, the book, was launched in June of 2013. And a couple of years later, 2 years, 3 years later, 4 years later, I was still in contact with a lot of the people, like yourself. And I started to notice wow, these people are really doing some amazing things. For example, you with this radio show that continues to go after all these years, and other people that I've interviewed, like Brad at the house, he was then working at the house, the gatehouse. And Charmaine was doing amazing things and with legislature and trying to get all kinds of, bills passed and all this stuff. And a number of other people were doing things in various levels after telling their story and sharing their story. And I became more and more interested. And so I thought, what I'm going to do? I'm going to go around with the same intention. From where you were in 2013, what have you done? What was your healing process? Where are you? What was it like to be involved in a compilation book with everybody sharing their story? All these questions and insights that you could share with other people that are not where you are. They're 5 years back or 10 years behind you in healing. What would you share? So I started interviewing a number of people, and I was just blown away with the quality of how people articulated what their experiences were with Unlock the Door and post Unlock the Door. So I have a lot of hours filmed on that. A few things happened in my life. Also was wrapping up the school and all the required hours that I needed to get to be the psychotherapist to graduate. So it got put a little bit on pause, And then every once in a while, I would interview somebody. And that's why I did a second interview with you. And I did a second interview with Charmaine because big things were happening for both of you. And then I was also coming up with a twist to the story rather than just presenting it as interview after interview or taking a subject and everybody's going to talk about where they are with shame. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to talk about where they are with their healing. And I wanted to really kind of add something else in there. So I didn't have that at first. I have that now. I have that now. And I did film it, but part of it, I wasn't happy with some of the filming. So I have to go back and film that again. And I can't give out anything around that because it'll give the twist away. But I'm going to be doing that. And it is still going to be done. It doesn't feel like it's exactly the right time to be doing it for me right now. So I'm just poking along with it. You know, like I even needed to, you know, prepare some of the technical things I needed to do. I needed to go and take a course for editing. And there were a number of things that I wanted in place. Because with what happened with Hush You, I wasn't certainly turning it over to anybody. I will bring somebody in, but I will maintain those files in my possession. So it's coming along. It's just going to be a process a little bit longer. I'm not pressuring myself to finish. There's still two things that really have to be done with that. And I have about two or three other things that I'm currently doing. And when those things are wrapped up, then I'll have the energetic space. Because when I start it, it'll be full on. All the editing that I did on Hush You was only 20 minutes long. And there were 30 hours of film, and I went through every stitch of it and had to mark it all down and splice it and collect it and figure out how to put it together. And it'll be much the same with this project, except it will turn into about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And there'll probably be about the same amount of footage, so a little bit less footage in there because I knew exactly what I wanted to capture. And in Hush You, we did more of a spread out version, so there was a lot more footage as I see it now. Anyways, it's not going to be any easier. It's going to be a real challenge. I need to be 150% focused on that when I begin it.
Looking forward to when you do finally complete it. It's just like we were mentioning earlier too, standing with James, he came in, he did an interview just after he won his court case, and which was really awesome. Looking forward to seeing that as well. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Deb Mayberry here with me here this evening. And also too, I'd like to point out too, I've known you since 2012, right? Or 13, I should say, right?
12.
Yeah, 12. And I've also had the opportunity, not only did we do the first 16-week co-ed program, the Phase 2 program at the Gatehouse, but I've also had the pleasure and opportunity to co-facilitate with groups with Deb in the past as well. Mm-hmm. I think we've done, three groups together?
I think it's three.
Yeah, three groups together. So, which I've done more with you than I've done with anybody else. So that was really, really, really awesome. And it was and it was awesome because we saw some people just grow and get out of that shell and move on to a better life. You know, that's the whole process about coming to the house. You know, when I went to the Gatehouse, I was done. I was fed up. You know, I was, well, if there was a rock bottom, I was there. And I crawled out of that rock bottom. And I'm always too proud to say, well, you know, meeting people like Deb is totally awesome. And part of my healing journey as well. But this is the whole thing about what I've done there and many others have done is that I've grown from, you know, from that hole I was in. You know, I can recover. I can heal. I can move on. And here I am today talking about it. So to me, that is a great feat. And then the connections I've made as well, like yourself and many others at the house. I mean, I could go on and on with names. Mm-hmm. We've met so many different people. But we've seen a lot of people come and go from the house over the years, haven't we?
We certainly have. And, you know, it's such a wonderful opportunity because sometimes you're involved in something and it's hard to get involved at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing with the Gatehouse programming is there's a lot of opportunity to contribute in various ways. And we have the phase one, phase two. I mean, you've talked about all these in the art program. I'm sure you've talked about that and the partners and all of that. And also the Gatehouse trains people to be facilitators.
Exactly.
And that's part of a lot of people's journey when they get to that level. And when you're in a room and you're not in your own head with your own stuff, or maybe a percentage of it is still there, but you're really listening to the people in the room to be the facilitator and to support their journey at that time. And you know, yourself, you know, there's a handful of the people that I came in at the same time.
Mm.
And you guys were really messed up,
mm-hmm.
really super angry. And there was so much pain, like just raw pain. And that's the thing with sexual abuse, is that it really cuts in to somebody's soul, into the spirit of that child. And it rewires on a physical level in the brain. And it, you know, the neurons are fired together and they're wired together, and there's pain and there's fear and there's all kinds of things that go on. And self-worth is, you know, put into a bucket and stirred with a lot of other crap, right? And so when we go to the gatehouse, we explore all of that. And I've seen the people that I started with come so far. Every time I meet them, even if I haven't seen people for 6 months or a year, and then you see them at the Christmas party, they come out, or, you know, maybe they come back to facilitate. They haven't been around for a while. And, you know, I was at a certain place. I felt pretty good when I started off, like I said, and, but I still had my stuff. I definitely did. And it really opened up some more awareness about myself and the way that the violations had affected me. And having that awareness, then I've been able to give it the attention that it needs and the healing, and to sit in a room and express feelings with a group of people is just an incredible feeling. There's nothing more than turning the violations, the trauma, into something that is perceived as a gift to somebody in the room. In a sense, not the actual experience is not a gift, but the insights and the awareness and be able to share and help somebody realize that it's not their fault. I just had that situation in a group last week, without going into any, you know, details, but there's this, you know, a lot of people, when they're violated on some degree, they think they're to blame or it's their fault. They didn't run. They didn't fight. They froze, or they actually, you know, had some pleasure of the experience, which is very, very shaming. But as a child, you don't know the difference. You know, you're groomed in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But what came out, so then when you start to get an awareness that it's not your fault, it's hard for a lot of people to even totally erase that. It's not as much as putting it up on the board and with the chalk and wiping it off, or deleting it on your computer. It takes a whole process. And the first level is, oh, awareness. So I'm not alone. Oh, so, oh, it isn't my fault. But you then somebody gets to know it on a mental capacity. They can say, oh, okay, I know it's not my fault, but they still feel it in all their emotions. And in the, like in a gut sense, if I say, was any of it your fault? And a lot of people will say, yeah, well, just a little bit. Like, it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from an intellect thought, mm-hmm. and everybody in a room, in a group, can go, if I say, okay, Stuart, you think it's your fault, for example. Okay, is that Jack's fault? And you would say, no, none of that's Jack's fault. He was only 6 years old. And I say, okay, was it Donna's fault? And you'll say, no way, right? But then when I say, is any of it your fault? And you'll say, well, I think a little bit, you know? And then when you get rid of the think, and then to get rid of that, the emotion of that, it takes some time and it takes some work.
You know, and it is quite heavy, like for most people that have had this experience, and especially when they think that and believe that. I know for myself, it was awful, like thinking that. I mean, believed that it was my fault, and it really never was my fault.
No.
The fact that I carried that for all those years,
mm-hmm.
And now I finally understand, well, yeah, I was a child. Well, why didn't I get that a long time ago? Well, that's because I was too embellished in my own shame and guilt and anger and all those other things to allow me to even think that. And which was, well, I found out that this is a better way. And believing that I was a child, and that's what it was. That's that simple. But we don't think it's that simple when we think that. We just take on the guilt and shame and the fact that we did it, realizing I was only a child. Well, I don't know why I didn't think of that, but, or anybody thinks of that, but when you're an adult, I guess things change, and I don't know, it was upside down world. But I'm glad I don't think like that anymore, and I don't believe that anymore. But I had to listen to other survivors go through the same experience, route, talking about their experiences the same as I have, to understand that I'm not reflecting on what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, when trauma happens, a part of that child locks in into that mental state, that age.
I call that the bullshit move.
Well,
I
know you had a... You have some interesting names for yourself.
I do.
When trauma happens, there's something that happens in your brain on a physical level. Not even to mention all the emotions and everything, all the body sensations that happen as well. So you get locked into thinking partly as that six-year-old. So when you become this adult and you say go to therapy or go to the gatehouse, and let's say, for example, probably the average age, the gatehouse is probably around 35 or 40, at least. They come in and they're still, then they're thinking as the adult, but they're reflecting back. And as the adult, they think, why didn't I run? Why didn't I tell? Why didn't I fight? So you've got this inner child speaking.
Screaming.
Yeah. But locked in.
Yeah.
To a mindset, and then you've got the adult locked in sort of the opposite. So the adult is criticizing the child, and then the adult's also speaking often as the child.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And then while doing so, what would be a good term for that? Well, misdirected on the truth. Greatly misdirected on the truth in regards
to false beliefs.
False belief, right? But that was a hard thing to believe.
But that's the thing, because the adult is still operating on the intellectual capacity of a child that is significantly younger. Mm. But there's still this blending of this this attitude or this trait, and it is really awakening when people realize that they weren't to blame on a physical level. You know, and it can take a lot. And some of the training that I have done, one is spiritual technology, Zivarad Sandowski from... part of Russia, Siberia, or somewhere. I can't remember exactly. I can't remember. Anyway, it's not important. And the other modality is havening.
Mm.
And both of these have something in common. And what they do is they actually activate the neurons on the amygdala. It's called amygdala depotentiation, which means you activate through some talking, very briefly, you activate those neurons. And then you put the person through a series of things, which can light touch and some auditory questions, commands.
Mm.
And what that does, it helps in the process of removing the charge. And people talk about triggers all the time. Well, you reframe it and it becomes a memory.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a saying that says, if you can talk about a memory without a charge, it becomes wisdom. And that's what I see in people like yourself, because you still have all the memories, but it doesn't poke at you like a knife.
Like it used to.
Like it used to. It doesn't cause that anger to flare up.
And that owns that too. I was talking about this the other day. I don't have the flashbacks I used to have. I don't have the nightmares I used to have. I get them from time to time, but if I do, I certainly don't react like I did before.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get past that. And talking about these experiences, kind of like Deb was talking about, made all the difference. That's what helped me move forward.
Well, you're releasing the energy, the tension that you are embodying when you're silent.
Mm.
So the dialogue that goes on in your brain is suffocating you. And when you have these... experiences where you're triggered, everything is full on instantly, because there's so much energy and tension. It's like a tight coil inside, and it's ready to explode. And the flashbacks and the dreams, it's a way of the subconscious to express it, to release some of it. Because when the person is shut down in their conscious brain, they're not even talking about it. They won't acknowledge it. Even to sometimes their loved ones don't even know. They don't tell their children. They don't tell their friends. So that's a lot of stress on the secret, maintaining the secret. And that's why so often people that have held the secret for years and years and years have physical ailments. People have cancer and arthritis and all kinds of, you know, migraines and all kinds of issues. And can I prove to you in this moment that there's a correlation? No, but I can tell you that you see it over and over and over and over again. And I myself, I know that I had something going on when I went to the gatehouse. And after 2 years of speaking even more openly than I already was, that just went away. It disappeared. So, and I know that it's happened with other people in terms of headaches and the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to, you know, put in sort of a little point in here, is that when people first come and they first start talking about it, then it can actually get worse before it gets better.
That's right.
Because you're revisiting it and you're bringing up a lot that you haven't ever talked about. So there needs to be some time to process that and to breathe through that. And that's why it's so important to have a support network in and around that. And I've always said, I don't believe people can heal alone. And certainly to have a one-on-one therapist that you're working with. And if you can get into a group, it's incredibly powerful, the group. And like we just had the conversation over dinner, I really believe that it would be even better if everybody that was in the group could also be getting individual therapy at the
same time
to process it 1 or 2 days afterwards, after the group, or to be with your psychotherapist or whatever type of therapist you choose to go to, and then going into group and to process it back and forth at the same time. I really think it would be advantageous if we were able to do that.
Because I know the group setting was what made it for me. Like it really, really helped me and hearing other experiences. I know when I came to the house, I believed I thought I was alone, but I thought I was alone, but not really. I mean, I didn't realize to that degree that I wasn't alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really powerful for me. But I met all these people going through the same, have gone through very similar experiences I have. And the more I talked, the more I talked. And this is the beautiful thing about what the house offered me, the peer support, was that, well, that helped me. That's why I'm sitting here today. Part of why I'm sitting here today. I mean, obviously, I had to do the work myself, and I had to talk about this stuff. I had to self-reflect. I had to go back and think, well, why? You know, I had to learn what I was feeling and what those feelings really meant to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm angry, but why am I angry? Okay, well, I'm guilty. I feel guilt. Well, or shame. But why do I feel guilt and shame? I understand those feelings as well. Mm-hmm. Not just, yes, this is what happened to me and that's what I feel, but how does that affect me, not just only as a man, but as a human being?
Mm-hmm.
So what do I do with that? Do I carry this or do I talk about it? And, well, I talked about it, and therefore the outcome of it is it doesn't hang on me like it did before.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore I don't have those nightmares and flashbacks that I used to have.
Yeah, and you know, another thing just came to mind too, in terms of group, if you're doing one-on-one therapy, and I was required to do this as part of training as a spiritual psychotherapist, so for the first time, because I'd never done it before, so I got a psychotherapist. And when you're talking one-on-one, sometimes, you know, maybe you don't know what to say or you're not sure what to say. And I know that happens sometimes when I'm working with a client. And in group, the distinction is that it doesn't matter if you talk or not sometimes. And, you know, right off the bat, I can think of a few people that didn't say a whole lot in group and yet still moved through a lot of healing because they were able to listen and process some of their stuff, because they could relate to each other without actually speaking a whole lot. And I think that was really important for a number of people to hear other people's stories, because they didn't want to talk, or they just You know, there are people that actually come in and they can't talk. I mean, I've had that in the groups that I've facilitated. And they just like, I just don't know what to say. I'm shaking. And when somebody else says, you know, I've been there too. Actually, what I'm feeling right now. So then they take, somebody else takes the conversation and the pressure's off that person. And, you know, it's important that they come around and they talk also, but sometimes people have to go through 2-3 groups before they can get to that place where they can actually articulate what they're feeling.
And that's all right. You can do the group as many times as you want. There's no judgment, whatever it takes to help you. And I've met people that have done that. They've done 3 or 4 times and it finally happened for them. And they finally see some kind of light and they move on, which is beautiful to see.
Yeah. And you never know what's going to happen in that person's world that says, okay, you know what? I think I'm okay now. I remember I was doing lady, you would know if I said who she was, but I won't, but she did a couple of she went through the phase one. She did 2 phase twos. Actually, both time I was her facilitator, and she was actually somebody who signed on when I needed clients. So I needed 2 clients to do 20 hours with me, 20 sessions, and then others had to do 10 up to 125 hours, the first block that was required. And this woman did 20 hours and then she still stayed on. She still continued to come every couple of weeks then, because at first it was free and then it turned into being paid. And so, and she had limited budget. So, but she kept coming. And then one day she said, you know what? I think I'm good.
Awesome.
And it was, we laughed and I was like, I am so happy for you. And she said, but can I still come later though? Because if I have to come back, I want to be able to come back. So, and she did twice. She contacted me and there had been stuff going on and she felt that she was falling back into old habits and old thinking patterns. And she came back. We did 2 sessions one time and 1 session another time. And I was able to remind her of how far she had come and that this too would pass whatever it was at the time. So
that's awesome.
So much fun. And we see that, you know, with a lot of the people that we know, either they just disappear from the gatehouse or they end up being facilitators.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? And I always say this too, you know, within saying that at the same time, there's a lot of people that just want to come, they want to heal and get on with their lives, which I totally get and understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a few that will stick around and do what we do, but that's all right too. But that's perfectly all right to come in there. My intention was to go in there and just heal and get the hell out of there. Well, I'm not gone yet.
That didn't happen.
But nevertheless, most people, that's what they want to do because they're tired of living the crap that they were living and they want to change that. And it's really awesome to see people come and, you know, from time to time we do come across them again, or they come visit and you see this light in their eyes, this glimmer in their eyes, as you talked about earlier. And it's wonderful to see that they're moving on with their lives and, you know, but yes, that experience happened to them, but they've moved on. And which is really good versus self-destruction.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's what I have found for myself is that I've moved on in many ways. I'm still known as, you know, an advocate in this area, and I always will maintain that in one degree or another. But there are other things in life and people, when they focused on it for so long and they've been in so much pain for so long and then they feel some relief, they just want to go on with their life and forget about that. And I know for myself, like right now I'm facilitating 2 groups at the gatehouse and then I have my clients and I'm doing what I call intuitive power coaching sessions as well. And I'm loving that immensely. And the other morning, again, I was, you know, about a month ago, I was, you know, asking the universe and the spirit again, you know, if I'm operating in my highest self, what am I doing now? Kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it came up, pray love. And pray love is a podcast and that will be airing on Tuesday nights at 10 PM.
Which is your podcast.
Yeah, this is my idea, my podcast. I have a co-host, Holly Robinson, who's a friend that I met at the Transformational Arts College. And I call her my younger twin. She's about half my age. And she is just medium, intuit, spiritual, so incredibly knowledgeable in various areas of spirituality. And I was telling her about this show, and I was telling her about running workshops based in and around healing and the different modalities that I've done, but I want to do 2-3-4-day workshops and go full in to a lot of different ways of relinking thoughts and patterns in the brain. I'm very, very interested in this area. I've done lots of studying in this. So I was talking to Holly about this. She goes, "This are all things I want to do." Mm. And it just came out. It said, "Holly, I would rather do this with somebody, and I would love for you to be my co-host." And she just almost jumped right through the phone that day. And absolutely, there was no hesitation. I always say decisions in life are either a hell yes or a hell no. And it was a hell yes for both of us. So we'll be doing a, up top of the show, a 22-minute meditation. And it's called Pray Love because there's so much negativity in our inner society, in our in our world. And there's a healing on an even higher level that needs to be done. And as I continue with the one-on-one, I want to expand that out into the world. So we'll be doing a meditation, which will be a 22-minute meditation. There'll be a subject of the evening, and I have that subject, but that hasn't been released publicly yet. Mm-hmm. And we will also, it will be like an imaginary circle, and we will pray for this individual. We will, for the healing, and we will pray for the people in our community. We'll pray for the people of the world, and we'll pray for Mother Earth, because Mother Earth is in a lot of danger
right now.
A great deal. There's a lot going on, and if we don't do something, the next generations, it's just going to be horrific. In my song Wake Up, it's I say, why Armageddon, not the golden age? And because we have it in our ability for this to be the golden age, and what's happening with the fires and the storms and everything like that, and the global warming, it's very frightening. So anyways, we're gonna do this, and it's a guided meditation. There's music there, and they'll be speaking through that. And then after the 22 minutes, Holly and I are gonna banter. We're gonna have conversations about all different things, from intuition to what is spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we perfect or are we imperfect? There's going to be a lot of different conversations, and we're going to have some guests on the show. It's going to go by incredibly fast. I know that. But we've done a lot of thinking about it, and I'm super looking forward to it. We're doing studying around that and research around that. I'm learning. You know, blog talk, that's why the first take on the show tonight messed up, because I had your mind in another place, and I appreciate all the help that you've given me, you know, learning this program. But I'm really looking forward to that and making a difference, hopefully, for some people out there. And I think that's what it's all about for me, is to just keep growing and keep expanding and really to focus on things that are really important. If nothing else, I've learned that if we do what we're passionate and what we love, we have a resonance, we have a vibration, and then other like-minded people are drawn to us, and we can do so much more together, just like you know, this show, right?
Yeah, now, that's totally awesome. I can't wait to hear it myself. I know Lika will like to hear that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really looking forward to that. So what is Deb? Well, I know you're going to be doing this, but do you have any other big plans for the future? Or you anything in the back of your mind that you'd like to try to accomplish along the way?
Well, right now, the priority, because the show is launching this coming Tuesday, so less than a week, there's ironing out all of that. There is the psychotherapist hat, building a clientele there. I don't want a lot of people. That focus will probably still be on childhood sexual abuse. So it's amazing, because the last two clients had nothing to do with that. It had to do with men our age and transitioning into different work or not working.
Can I ask you a question related to that?
Sure.
Will you expand to other types of trauma, or you think? Is that possible?
Oh, I have. I mean, you never know who's coming in. You know, mm-hmm. I've helped people that have been in car accidents and they...
Brain injuries.
Well, not on a physical level that they had brain injuries, but trauma in terms of the emotional trauma. So different types of, I mean, you know, I had somebody, you know, here at my home who had a lot of grief, had lost a child. And it's similar, but it's so different. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trauma. So, you know, in order for me to grow, I have to open up, and I'm certainly not going to restrict to any one particular area.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's the intuitive coaching, the power coaching, which I absolutely love, which I put myself in a little bit of a trance, and I tune in with the person, and the person shares what they're going through. This is not therapy. Mm-hmm. If I detect that you're looking for therapy, the intuitive session will end, and we'll talk about the potential of doing therapy together, or I'll recommend somebody that you could work with in terms of the therapy. So this is it's a very different. It doesn't mean that, you know, sensitive things can't come up, but it's just different. So I'm enjoying that. I have, my book is full with clients for that right now. Actually, it's quite interesting how
awesome.
I need the hours for the psychotherapy, and I'm doing more of the intuitive work right now, which is really wonderful. The other thing that I'm, you know, so into the music and doing another album. And I also just purchased an interface because Jason and I, my music producer, the other day, last week, I went in with some ideas, and all of a sudden we created the actual music for the meditation that will be played on Pray Love on Tuesday night.
Mm.
So it just got me thinking. And the very next morning I actually woke up, I wrote out two other meditations, and I have listed eight others down that came to me. I don't want to give that away either, but I'm going to do an album for meditation or MP3s. And I had written in my little journal not that long ago about writing some music for other people as well. So people that have ideas for talking meditations and they would like to add some music, then that's something that, you know, I love to do as well.
Mm.
And with the new system that I purchased, that's a big reason behind purchasing.
It works out for you.
I know. I'm really excited to see. It's called Focusrite, and it's sitting over there in the box. It just arrived today, so I won't hook that up probably until after the podcast. Otherwise, I'll be I won't be doing everything I need to do in the podcast.
So another question I need to ask you too. I won't keep us here too much longer because I know we both had a crazy, crazy long day. But I think this is very important for other survivors to understand this. And we were talking about this as well at dinner time. What's it like to be part of a co-ed group for you? You have both men and women come in together for the very first time talking about their experiences. Now, anybody out there who does similar work to what we do, and I know I have friends over in the UK that do the exact same thing, right off the bat, rather than segregating, having men on one side and having women on the other side, it kind of reminds me of our very first phase 2, 4,000 group we did. It was so funny. But that's another level in itself. But this is the very first time you're going to bring both sides in and you're going to hear stories from both sides. And it's pretty empowering what you were telling me, but I was wondering if you could share a little bit of that experience with others, knowing that may have a fear, of, you know, talking about this stuff, you know, while thinking that, well, he looks like my perpetrator, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a trigger or whatever you want to call it inside right there. Well, and maybe that didn't happen in this case, but I'm sure it does happen sometimes. I know I've gone in and I've done groups where I've triggered people because who I look like or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, and imagine this, and this is when I go and I talk about sacred path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where my journey going to be going? And I've triggered people. I remember one time it kind of like put me off a little bit, but now it doesn't really matter. I encourage that to go in. I want that to happen. But could you kind of describe what that experience is like doing this? People need to know, or people need to understand awesome this is what I'm getting at.
It is, you know, on the first part of this, you know, I've had a man tell me that I've triggered him because he had, you know, strong women in his life that I reminded him of, and that brought up stuff. And I've also been in a room where I remember it so, so clearly, that there was a man in there that looked just like the man that I write about in Unlock the Door, the perpetrator. And I really had to just sit with that. And it was a very crazy experience. It had happened one other time in my life that these two men both reminded me of Alan Stoneham, who was my perpetrator, who was 42 when I was 10 years old. But so it doesn't matter if you're at a group or on the street or wherever, you can have somebody, you know, remind you of somebody that, that violated you. In terms of the phase one, so typically it was always, we had the males in, you know, on Wednesday night, and we had the females on the Tuesday night. And it was felt that, and I believe this, I believe a lot of people wouldn't come. A lot of males wouldn't come, and a lot of females wouldn't come if the genders were mixed. And a lot of that has to do around fear for the women to be afraid of seeing a man, right? Or sharing with a man, because three quarters of the time it was a man that perpetrated. And men to reveal what they're feeling on that type of level and what was done to them with women, that can hold a lot of shame. Now, 25% of the perpetrators I found over the years are females. So also for the men, that could be somebody in, you know, in the room as a female that reminded them. And with the females as well, because there are females that violate females, right? Now, it's a smaller percentage, those categories. But it does, it most definitely
it happens.
Now, that put aside, because that can happen even in the phase two group, you might run into that. And that's why we always discuss what it's like being in the room with the opposite gender. So it was some time ago. I remember thinking about, you know, there were a number of people that had talked about, should we have a phase one that is mixed? And there was always some resistance to that, and asking participants, there would be, I would say, 10% that would say, that would be good. And another 10% that would say, I don't think I would go. Maybe even up to 25%. I don't think. And then the other ones would say, well, I don't think it really matters a whole lot. I'm here to heal. And whatever's going to get me to healing faster or better, then I'm all for that. So at the, it was last year, John and I had done a group together. And we were talking, you know, about doing another group together in the future. And I said, you know what I'd really like to do? I said, I would like to do a phase one that was mixed. And he went, wow, yeah, me too. I want to do that. If you're doing that, I want to do that too. So literally that was our last night of, you know, of that group. So we went downstairs. And we went up to Maria, the executive director at the Gatehouse. And I said, Maria, we want to do a phase one that's mixed. And she kind of smiled and said, really? And we said, yes. And she said, but I need you guys for phase two. And I said, that's fine. Because here's what we can do. And I looked at John. I said, we can do the phase one at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 6, and we will do the phase two from 7 to 9. And she said, you're going to do that? And John kind of looked at me. He went, yeah, okay. And so anyway, so we agreed to do that. And we immediately had that set up. So there was a delay, and Maria hadn't posted it. And every time I would go there and say, hey, Maria, you know, we're going to put that up, because I was doing another group right away at phase two. And so finally, that group that I was facilitating was almost over. And I went and I said, Maria, what are you doing? Like, how come you haven't posted? And she's just busy. She had so much on her plate. So then she said, oh, I'm going to do it. And then she forgot again. And then so I contacted her. And I said, we have, I think it was 2 to 3 weeks before group started. And I said, I haven't heard anything. What's going on? She goes, oh, my God. So she posted it, and it filled up within a week. So two things happened. I mean, one is that all the other groups, the phase ones, were full. And I think even the phase twos that were starting up were full. And half of the people that signed for phase one co-ed they had either taken the complete phase one previously, or they had taken part of it, and for whatever reason, they had to leave the group. So they had a bit of a feel for what was going to happen in these sessions. So on the first night, you know, we asked the same question as phase two, you know, after welcome and thanks for having the courage to come here and do this work. How are you feeling with this being a co-ed group? Now, everybody had signed on to it, so most people are going to be okay, more or less. And most of the people were comfortable from the beginning. And there were a couple that were like, I remember one Mormon in particular said, well, I've never done this before, but I get along with men. So I thought, okay, and she didn't want to wait. And remarkably enough, there's no difference once people get talking. It's all the same emotions they're dealing with, various degrees, right? And everybody in this group was just phenomenal in terms of sharing and the support of each other. So there hasn't been really much. No, I don't think there's nothing that's coming up. In fact, I think it's better in a sense, because right away people know that we both went through this, meaning males and as females. And sometimes we've had trans people in there as well. But it's like, you know,
all around, everybody.
Gay people, everybody in there.
Yeah.
We all went through some of the same stuff. We were violated. We lost our voice. We suffered. We have pain, right? So the one thing with this group is right away in phase one, than any of the gender bias that people could have. It's just broken right away. And it's like they dismiss that that's an issue. So that gets resolved in the first session, the first phase. So then they can get on, they can leave that energy. Like I said, you release that energy because you understand it, you're aware of it, you process it immediately. The Me Too from a man is just as powerful, if not more, than the Me Too from another woman.
That's awesome.
There's something that connects in that. And, you know, we experienced that. There were a couple of pretty strong connections in that phase two group that we were in that you would never have ever anticipated that those two particular people would connect for whatever reason.
That's awesome. You know, and I love what you're saying, and I've been hearing others do it. I have some friends over in the UK are doing this, and it's a great success. And I just thought it was awesome, especially when I heard that you and John were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I can't wait for my turn to do this, and I'm looking forward to it because I want to do it as well.
Well, you should sign up for it because, I mean, there's some stuff going on at the house, though, in terms of that time, right?
Yeah, but I'm also doing a group coming up starting next Wednesday, and I'm busy. Well, I'm doing the art therapy program for myself, but I've done that at Christmas. But I know in the new year, I'm definitely going to pursue doing a co-ed program for the phase one as well. I really, really want to do that. Just, you know, I think it's very important just so I can get a, you know, well, I want to see it. I want to be part of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just another thing that's powerful,
transformational, you know?
Exactly. It's another opportunity to grow.
Mm. You know, I'm really, really grateful at the house. I've been part of many programs. Obviously, I don't do the women's phase one program, but I've been part of all the others most of them for quite a degree, and I'm involved in a partners program as well. So just the fact that I have that opportunity to connect with all these people coming from different places, and the Gatehouse gave me the opportunity to do that. I'm very, very honored. I never thought that this would come into play. That's kind of close within what we were talking about earlier when we started the program about how people change and how people will transform as like my radio show, Personal Transformation. Well, this is just part of it. So just one of these things you never expect that I would stay and do that like yourself, you've done, look what you're doing now. So whenever I hear you, like I get really excited when you talk about that with you and John, because I think that's totally awesome, because segregation, I think is wrong, right? In a lot of aspects. Like obviously there's some people that just couldn't do it. But if you can get both together, and where they're sharing their experiences. I know with myself, I was abused from both sides. So I was really messed up one way or another, in a lot of ways. So I found it really beneficial, even in the phase two program, because I needed to hear stories from other women that have been through similar experiences, mm-hmm. whether they were violated by a man or by a woman. I needed to hear that. I needed to hear their stories to understand why, so I could understand myself.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have the women in the group that it's like they, you know, their expression of empathy for you being violated by another woman. And, you know, they're like, oh, I can't even believe that
would
happen, you know, a woman. And that's part of the myth is that females do violate little boys. And
exactly.
It's sad. I mean, there are definitely more males that are the perpetrators.
Oh, definitely. There's still.
But it only takes that one person coming into your life that can disrupt your harmony and joy as a child.
Yeah, because this one lady that she violated me from a very young age, and then she took my virginity.
Yeah.
You know, and that really messed me up, right? But I was still being abused by males as well on top of that. So I had I won't say, it was a double whammy of confusion is what I'm trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I sorted that out, right? But it does happen, and thankfully it doesn't, you know, thankfully that I was able to work it out and figure things out and move on.
For sure. And, you know, I'm loving this. I have a phase one group and a phase two group, like I said, back to back.
Yeah.
I have an hour in between.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of difference. I mean, we talk about, we have different topics,
mm-hmm.
right? Things that we're focusing on, because in the phase two, it's more
it's
mindfulness.
Yeah.
Right? But they're the same, you know, essentially. I mean, the phase two, they've gone through the whole phase one program. But they're just people. People working through and really slicing a time out of their life for their healing.
Mm.
And they're there to do the work, however you want to format it. I always say, I like to use the word work, but they're there to contribute to the group, because they bond. Every group I've ever been in, except for one, have bonded so quickly, you know, with the Me Too and feeling empathy for each other and support around whatever that person happens to be going through on that particular night. There's always somebody that will step up and be so supportive of them, because there's somebody that understands that particular thing that they're going through.
You know, that's wonderful to see that. Like I've done many groups like yourself, and it didn't matter what group it was. It was always so nice to see them supporting one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, talk about the worst crap ever and then support one another.
Mm-hmm.
And with no bias. It's just pure, you know, light and spirit and love, right?
Yeah.
You know, which is totally awesome. Folks, I think we're going to call it quits, because I think we're both basically toed the line really, really far. But we're kind of glad we got this, because redone what we're doing here now, would have been next Thursday. But I think it's really beneficial that we took the time to come and try to do this now, which we have. We've done it. Obviously, it's not the same as the first time. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze here. I think I'm going to sneeze. there we go.
Bless you.
At least I didn't do it in the mic. That would be just horrible. But anyway, folks, I really want to thank you for listening in, and for the ones that will be listening in later on. I have to thank Deb Medberry for coming on the podcast, as you've done many times before. I know we're going to do this again. I can't wait to see what you've done, we'll do with your own podcast in the future. And I'm looking forward to hearing that next Tuesday, or whenever you decide to release it. I guess it's next Tuesday.
Yeah, it's going to be the first one is going out, barring any technical issues.
Yeah.
This coming Tuesday at 10 p.m. here on Blog Talk Radio.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, really. Really looking forward to it. I'm looking to the interface and wondering, what's that for?
But you know what? This has been a really, really big learning curve for me too, learning these things, what I should do and what I shouldn't do. And, well, tonight I did what I shouldn't do. It's a really good example of this is what it's all about. And you know, I'm laughing at it now, and that's about all I can do. But I'm happy with the way it all turned out in the end. So what more can we ask for? Ladies and gentlemen, I've had Deb Medberry here with me tonight, the author of Unlocked Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. Go on to Amazon, you can get it from Amazon
too,
right?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
You can go on Amazon, you can go on a whole bunch of places. And now, what about, you have a website, right?
I do have a website. It's just my name, debmayberry.com.
Okay. And you can get it from there as well.
Well, it's easier just if, you know,
Amazon?
It's easier unless people are at the gatehouse.
Yeah.
Right at the gatehouse, I can sell them there. But it's actually cheaper if people just purchase it from Amazon.
Mm. So my story's in there, Deb's story, plus many others there that are in the book. And I know from reading the book myself, it was even helpful for myself. So hearing other people's stories as well. And again, falling back to kind of like it's a co-ed experience because you have both men and women in there,
mm-hmm.
Sharing their stories. And from all different walks of life, I may add as well. Deb, thank you. Thank you for dinner. And thank you for having me in your home at the same time. By the way, this home, we're in the middle of the Caribbean someplace. You didn't know that. Anyway, folks, I want to thank you for joining us. And I will see you next week, provided I don't push any wrong buttons. And I will be back. Thank you, Deb.
Thanks so much for having me, Stu. It was a lot of fun.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Good night, folks.
Good night.
Talk to you later. There we go.